Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Vihari.
Paramahansa Paramahansa also tell us Satoshi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachadanada Bhaktivananda Goswami Srila Prabhupada Kijaya, ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Kijaya, Ananda Goti Vaishnava Vrindi Kijaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Kijaya Pramse Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Rabu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shubhasiddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopagopata Saim Kund Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavanam Kijaya Maturidam Kijaya Navadeepdam Kijaya Jagannatha Swami Kijaya Yamunamaya Kijaya Srimati Galasi Devi Kijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Gijaya Gaur Premananda All glorious, the assembled devotees. All glorious, the assembled devotees. All glorious, the assembled devotees. All glorious, the Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kijai. Okay. So we're reading from the Nectar of Instruction, text 1. And I'll just chant the Sanskrit one or two or three times, and then we'll go on to the purport since we've been reading. And I'll read the translation. But we don't have to do it responsibly because we did it yesterday. So Om Ganat Timidanda Shaganan Janashlakaya Chakshur and Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurvenamaha. So Vacho Vegam Manasa Kruda Vegam Jiva Vegam Murpashta Vegam Itan Veganayo Vishakita Tira Saramapi Mam Pratibim Sashishad Vacho Vegam Manasa Kruda Vegam Jiva Vegam Murpashta Vegam Itan Veganayo Vishakita Tira Sarvam api vam prati vim sashishat. So the translation is, a sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. Okay, so we're going to continue with the purport. Does anyone remember why this text comes first? Why I explain this text to you? Why? Of a guru, because before you can go progress any further, you got to look for someone to give you guidance, and that's the standard. You don't look for someone who just has like sparks coming out of his head or anything like that, or can produce ashes or whatever. Ashes for the asses. So you don't. Time to wake up. So you look for someone who can, that's the standard. Because you can't really understand someone's level of spiritual advancement beyond that standard of what's called nishta. See, this is actually describing nishta right here, this first verse. What is nishta? Nishta means steadiness in devotional service. It's one of the various stages in advancement. Is there a box of tissues somewhere? Tissues. How do you say that in Hindi? Tissues. That's a Hindi word for tissues. They're very nice. See, I'm learning Hindi very quickly. So, that's right. I'm not going to use many. It's just symptoms of ecstasy. So, what? So, as I was saying, there's various stages in devotional service. Ado shradita ta sadhu sango ta vajana kriya tola natana vritti shat. And then after natana vritti is nishta. And then after that is ruchi. So anyway, we can, this is a stage in devotional service, this stage of nishta, which is steadiness not only in one's sadhana. There's two types of steadiness under the heading of nishta. One is steadiness in sadhana, and the other one is steadiness throughout the rest of the day. So this verse applies to the whole day, 24 hours a day, including the sadhana, of course. Because many people have good sadhana, and when they're finished with their sadhana, then they do all sorts of nonsense. You know, like Prabhupada said jokingly one time, moving his counter beads down, he said, I finished my 16 rounds, now I can do any damn thing. So that's not the full understanding of nishta. And of course, after nishta, then you get ruchi. A ruchi, and there's different types of ruchi too. One type of ruchi is when you like the kirtan or class when it's given nicely. And the other type, the higher type, is when you like it even if the person can't chant well, like in Fiji. So, isn't it, they can't keep a tune in Fiji. You'll go, if you go to Fiji, you'll experience that. I mean, those of you from Fiji know what I'm talking about. So, so the higher type of ruchi is one like kirtan, even if someone who can't keep a tune is chanting. So, I don't know if I'm on that higher type right now. Because some of the kirtans in Fiji, we had, was that kirtan for Ram Nomi? It was like bongo drums and djembe drums and screaming. I can't say exactly that I love that kirtan. Actually, I ran to my room to get away. So, both places, Lambasa and Suva. The Suva they're following in the footsteps of the devotees in Lambasa. So let's continue. I mean, we talked about everything up to the tongue yesterday, and actually the tongue and belly. So now, then we go to the genitals. This is the next paragraph here on page 6, those of you who have a book in the bottom. In a similar manner, The urges of the genitals, the sex impulse, can be controlled when not used unnecessarily. The genitals should be used to beget a Krishna-conscious child. Otherwise, they should not be used. The Krishna-conscious movement encourages marriage not for the satisfaction of the genitals, but for the begetting of Krishna-conscious children. As soon as the children are little grown up, they are sent to our Gurukul school in Dallas, Texas. This is in the old days. Obviously, we don't do that now. Where they are trained to become fully Krishna-conscious devotees. Many such Krishna-conscious children are required, and one who is capable of bringing forth Krishna-conscious offspring is allowed to utilize his genitals. Actually, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur stated that if he thought he could have Krishna-conscious children, he'd be prepared to have sex life 100 times. So let's discuss this for a second. This is actually a dharmic method. We were talking about this yesterday as we were going around to different homes. There's different dharmic methods. There's different dharmic methods to purify desires. I mean, every one of us has a desire. And of course, the example I gave yesterday talking about my own desires was the desire to enjoy opulent food. You know, I definitely had that desire when I joined the Hare Krishna movement because of the one substance. What is the substance I mentioned yesterday? The sweet ball is during the japa, but in general, there was one substance that was added to all the prasadam that made it ghee. Prabhupada said when we distribute food to the non-devotees, if we give them ghee, they will actually become attracted and join the Hare Krishna movement. If we give them oil, then they may join someone else. Or they may work for Sanatan, who imports oil into Fiji. So, anyway, but, you know, ghee is very important. I understand in the temples, you know, they can't prepare, like, big feasts with ghee anymore. We used to do that. But ghee has become very expensive. But it has a very special taste. And the demigods, they never eat food that is not cooked in ghee. They refuse. There's nothing, you know, it's just, that was actually, this is an interesting story in the Bhagavatam, how Pururava, you know the story of Pururava and Urvasi?
Yeah.
Pururava fell in love with Urvasi, and she was cursed to come down to the earth planet. And she had certain conditions for getting married. And one of them was that everything had to be cooked in ghee. Of course, there were other conditions, like to take care of her lambs, she had pet lambs, and also that she shouldn't see him naked. And later on, she saw him naked because he was running in the fields to rescue the lambs, and then she left. But anyway, so the point is ghee. Well, Charvaka Muni, you know what he says. Does anyone know the quote from Charvaka Muni?
Beg, borrow, steal,
but get yourself some ghee. Because that's tradition. That's Shastra, so. That's called the Epicurean type of understanding. So the point I'm making is that we all have these different desires. I mean, whether we're talking about the sex desire there, or the desire to enjoy food, or the desire to enjoy music. And if we engage those desires in a dharmic way, those desires get purified. But if you engage them in an adharmic way, then they don't get purified. You know, if someone, I mean, let's say, take an example, someone has the urge of the genitals, which is described here, so then they start watching pornography. I think you all know what that is. And so that's adharmic, and it doesn't get purified and increases the desire. It doesn't decrease. Whereas if you engage it in a dharmic way, the desire gradually decreases, or even if the body still has the desire, you're able to tolerate it. It's not something that's so significant to you anymore. I mean, for example, you know, my body still wants to eat opulent food. You know, if I see a ghee there, you know, that's why I'm talking about it so much. If I see a nice pakora cooked in ghee, you know, the body has a natural reaction. You know, wow. It's like a Pavlovian personality. So you naturally, you know, start to salivate. But because the consciousness is a little higher after 45 years in the Hare Krishna movement, hopefully, then at that point, you know, I can control it. You know, I just say no. before it gets too intense, because there's this process which is called thinking, feeling, willing. So if you stop it at the initial thinking stage, it's really easy to control. But, you know, feeling means you begin to feel it like that. You know, like you look at a piece of cake or something, you know, whatever is your favorite food or pizza or something like that. And you look at it, but then if you control, you just look, you look away or you chant, Hare Krishna, to the pizza. That's why in the beginning days of the movement, the brahmacharis, whenever they saw a lady, they'd go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It didn't work. Most of them ended up married, so it didn't work so well. They took, I mean, just like in Lotoka, there were a bunch of brahmacharis who took a vow never to get married, and then didn't work. They weren't Bhishma. They were Abhishma. Anyway, so they weren't Vyavasayadnagabulhirekehakurananda. So the point is to stop it at the first stage. You know, thinking. Yeah. I mean, anybody could think of practically anything. But then, like I gave the example the other day of me hang gliding. So I can think of it, but if I start to feel how nice it would be, that's the feeling, how nice it would be to be in the air, floating around, you know, looking at everybody. And wow, then it becomes very hard to stop the urge at that point. Actually, you know how I engaged that in Krishna service? It's interesting. I got myself a quadcopter so I can take pictures of Govardhan Sea from the air. So actually, I did find a way to dovetail that. We have this quadcopter. You know what a quadcopter is? A UAV drone, as they say nowadays. And you put these goggles on. And you can actually see from the air. And if we have time while I'm here, I can show you pictures of some of the pictures we took in Mayapur from the air. Like of the new temple and everything like that. From like, you know, like 500 meters up in the air. So it's very interesting. So anyway, so I found a way to dovetail. And it gets purified. But if I didn't find a way, it wouldn't get purified. If I just went up hang gliding. I'd want to go again and again. Like you see people who do skydiving, it's not that you just do it once. I know people who've gone 100, 150 times skydiving. Until the parachute doesn't open, then they don't do it anymore. That's the last skydiving they do. But, you know, it's nice. You can be Krishna conscious when the parachute doesn't open. Hare Krishna! Splat! And you go back to Godhead. So anyway, so joking aside, this is actually the point. If we have a Krishna conscious way to dovetail the desire that's dharmic, really, that's the key. The key word is dharmic. How do you know whether something is dharmic or not? That's very hard. We described this also yesterday. Not by studying the Vedas. Not by argumentation and logic. But simply a Mahajana Yena Gatasa Panta, by following in the footsteps of great devotees and also talking to great devotees and asking them if it's dharmic. Because it's not always easy to understand. Like I gave the example yesterday, a Yudhisthira was asked to lie by Krishna and he thought it was adharmic because he was just quoting Shastra. Arjuna didn't want to fight because he thought fighting was adharmic. He had his own quotes from the Shastras. People have so many quotes from the Shastras, they can prove any damn thing. Just like, even quotes from Prabhupada, I mean, it's just amazing how people have these quote fights. Yeah. You know, there's this, I'm going to tell you one quote I read this morning that one of my godbrothers sent out. He said, there was a quote from Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, basically, this was in 1974 or something like that. Prabhupada said, don't open any other thing other than a temple, basically. In this, you should only have temples, and anyone who wants to join, they should just put on dhotis immediately and everything like that. But then if we apply the quote to today, then we'd have to stop the law program. We'd have to stop what we're doing, the Krishna West program. You'd have to stop the most successful preaching program in India we've ever had, which is the student hostels, you know, for the students, where they can live and chant
Hare Krishna. We have to stop so many programs. Because times have changed. So in other words, you can't really take a quote from Prabhupada out of the context in which it was given and then apply it to now. You know, Prabhupada was presented with the point that in India we have these student hostels, maybe 10 or 15 of them in Delhi, and we have all these IIT students, that means Indian Institute of Technology, you know, intelligent people joining. Prabhupada would say, Hare Krishna, you know, it's wonderful. You know, so Prabhupada did adjust things as he saw great success. Like when he wanted to bring Tamal Krishna Maharaj back to India, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj brought Prabhupada all these devotees he had just made, and each one offered a flower to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, okay, you stay here. So, you know, so really you have to really be careful with intelligence to understand even the orders of the spiritual master. Because you can take something from a few years ago and then just be disobeying the spiritual master by taking that quote. And as I mentioned before, the Vedic standard is actually palena parichyate. You judge something by the fruit or by the result. So if you have some preaching program and you're making thousands and thousands of devotees and they're chanting Hare Krishna, and even if they're dressed in suit and tie, which is kind of nice, looks nicer than a dhoti, actually. Like your brother came to one of our programs, he had a suit and tie, and I said, that looks much better than a dhoti. Dhoti looks so sloppy. You know? It did. It did. I actually, you know, there's no problem. You can go back to Godhead wearing a suit and tie. You know, you can be Krishna's butler in the spiritual world. You know, like butlers that wear suit and ties. So, anyway, to control my humor pushing. At least that's not there in this verse, you know. The pushing of the humorous thing. So anyway, so, okay. So this is the point about controlling the genitals or any other thing. It's done dharmically, fine. Dharmically, the genitals means having Krishna-conscious children. We want so many Krishna-conscious children. We have schools. There's no religious society that remains stable and doesn't disappear, that doesn't take care of his children as his first priority. There's not, if you look at religious history, religious sociology, you will never see a religious society that continues, that puts the children as second priority, third priority. Why? Because people do get married, as much as you want to prevent them from getting married. People do get, in the old days it was like that, we tried to prevent people. But people do get married, they have children, and wherever the children go or whatever the children do, the parents follow. It's like in America, we have this thing called soccer moms. You ever heard this expression before? Soccer moms. I mean, that means the child's going to the soccer games, which incidentally is not so good because the children get brain damage from that, but that's another issue. Many, many, many children, now it's being discovered as they grow up, they actually have brain damage from soccer, football, different things like that, because they get hit on the head, and and if the brain damage is really bad, they have mental diseases as a result of that. So, my advice is, if you're a parent, have them play some nice sport like ping pong, where, you know, if the ping pong ball hits your head, it's not really going to hurt you that much. So. Yeah, it's a fact. I mean, there's been found out, at least in the United States, I don't know if here they've found that out too, that many children have suffered some sort of brain damage, even if it's not a full concussion. You just get a hit on the head. The child's skull is a lot softer than our skulls. You know, we may be hard-headed, but children are soft-headed. So anyway, so the point is that it's just very important that we focus on children in our Krishna consciousness movement. And then we'll have someone to take over the movement also when we pass away. Actually, even in the business world, they spend, you know, if you have meetings of your committees or whatever, they spend 30 to 40% talking about what will happen when they're no longer in charge. That has to be a major, major point of discussion, and we need to do that in ISKCON too. So, having children is fantastic if they're Krishna conscious children. Otherwise, they're not putras, they're mutras. You know that saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Putra means those who save the father. Mutra means those who come from genitals. Urine, I'm sorry. It's from urine.
Yeah.
Son of urine, Prabhupada described that. Mutra. So, anyway, enough of that. So, next paragraph. When one is fully practiced in the methods of Krishna consciousness, he can become qualified to be a bona fide spiritual master. That's obvious. In his Anuvritti explanation of Upadeshamrita, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that our material identification creates three kinds of urges: the urge to speak, the urge or demands of the mind, and the demands of the body. So he's putting it into three different classifications right here. When the living entity falls victim to these three types of urges, his life becomes inauspicious. One who practices resisting these demands or urges is called tapasvi, or one who practices austerities. By such tapasya, one can overcome victimization by the material energy, the external potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Actually, this is a statement too, that one who can control his tongue can control the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's interesting, isn't it? If you can control the tongue. Because the tongue is actually the perhaps the most important sense to control. Because if you engage in Krishna Katha, then your mind becomes purified, and you won't want to do any of these things that are prohibited in Krishna consciousness. So next paragraph. When we refer to the urge to speak, we refer to useless talking, such as that of the impersonal Mayavadi philosophers or persons engaged in fruitive activities technically called karmakanda, or of materialistic people who simply want to enjoy life without restriction. All such talks or literatures are practical exhibitions of the urge to speak. Many people are talking nonsensically and writing volumes of useless books, and all of this is the result of the urge to speak. To counteract this tendency, we have to divert our talking to the subject of Krishna. This is explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, fifth chapter, texts 10 to 11. Yadvachas chitrapadam harer yasho jagat pavitram pragranita karhichit tudvayasam tirtam mushanti manasa nayatra hamsa niramanchu shikshayaha. Those words which do not describe the glories of the Lord, who alone can sanctify the atmosphere of the whole universe, are considered by saintly persons to be like unto a place of pilgrimage for crows. Since the all-perfect persons are inhabitants of the transcendental abode, they do not derive any pleasure there. So this example of crows is one of the typical examples that Prabhupada used, and is there in the Vedic literatures. The reason is the crows, they would always go for the refuse. If any of you have been in India, I was in Jagannath Puri one time, and we were staying at a hotel right next to, unfortunately, the garbage dump. And they were crows. I mean, this big, the crows in India. I mean, you see the crows here, they're tiny little cute things. But in India, they're like Jatayu, you know, basically. They're big. And so that's why that example is used. And they're always going after the stool. And it's just an insult to call someone a crow. Like Prabhupada, I don't know if I should use this, but anyway, I'll say it anyway. So Prabhupada said, the Americans are old crows. And the people who come from India to America are the new crows. Did you ever hear that example before? And the reason Prabhupada said that, he said the old crows, they're tired of eating stool, and they'll take up Krishna consciousness more quickly. Mm-hmm. Whereas the new crows, they're more enthusiastic. That was Prabhupada, don't blame me. And it's a fact that, you know, sometimes I give a lecture in America and I ask people, who here has been to Disney World or Disneyland? Everyone raises their hand. I said, who here has been twice, three times, five times, 10 times? Mm-hmm. And I was just speaking to one of my disciples, 21 times he's been to Disney World. And I said, why? What's there? He said, well, just serving my family. So, But America is usually, I mean, I went once, and that was with Jayapataka Maharaj. And we had a good excuse. The excuse was to look at the rides there so we could figure out what to do in Mayapur. You know, dovetailing our desires to be with Mickey Mouse. So, but it's like that, you know, when you're just doing something new, it's more attractive. But when it's older, it's like, what is it? Been there, seen it, done it. Like that. So that's why Prabhupada had really a lot of success in preaching in America, because Krishna Chandra asked me the question yesterday about, you know, I was born in a very wealthy family. How could I take up Krishna consciousness? Because I was an old crow. You understand?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Asundar Gopal, okay. So, because I was an old crow. And that's why I lost my taste. So then Prabhupada made the Americans Krishna conscious and brought them to India, and the people who wanted to become crows saw the Americans who were old crows and said, well, maybe, who are come to Krishna conscious, said, well, maybe it's not such a good idea to become a crow then. That was Prabhupada's strategy. Anyway, so that's why the word crow is used here. And, of course, one who speaks about anything other than Krishna consciousness or things related to Krishna or Krishna's service or glorification of Krishna's devotees, it actually contaminates the atmosphere by bringing in the modes of nature. That's really the point. When you talk about anything not related to Krishna in some way or other, then you have goodness, passion, or ignorance coloring and contaminating the atmosphere. And that pollutes the mind. Because the atmosphere, even the subtle atmosphere here, can become polluted. Like if you were to play some Bollywood music here, it just, or like if someone's mobile phone goes off and there's so many of these ringtones that you have, you know, with the Bollywood music or some nonsense, and it just pollutes the whole atmosphere. You can feel it. So that's what it means to play the pilgrimage for crows. And then the next verse of the two is, Tadvag visarga janataga viplavo yasmin pratislokam abadavachupi namananantasha yisho nikatani yat shinbanti gayanti grinanti sadavahu. On the other hand, that literature which is full of description of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, forms, pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a different creation, full of transcendental words directed towards bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of the world's misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literatures, even though imperfectly composed, are heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Prabhupada was fond of quoting this, particularly in regard to his initial Bhagavatams that had, in one sense, so many English errors in them. You know, there was, and the typesetting was done imperfectly. The Prabhupada said, even though these imperfections, material imperfections are there, these words can actually change the hearts of people. And that's really what happened. The words of Bhagavatam and the holy names changed the hearts of people. So that is our business, to create, I often quote this verse here, that create a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization. That's actually the purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, to have a revolution. Before I joined the movement, I was part of another revolution. It was like a student revolution against the government because we had the Vietnam War going on. So, you know, we would all get together and have what we call be-ins. Everyone's heard of a be-in before? No, you don't want a be-in. That's where all the hippies would get together, hold hands, and chant, "All you need is love," as they smoke marijuana. So, because I wouldn't do that, but anyway. So I was part of that generation. And we thought we were going to create a revolution. We call the people in charge, we called them the establishment. You know, the people in charge. We're going to get rid of them and create a world where everyone loves each other and gets along, because we weren't too successful at that. Because now there's more wars than ever, you know, and all sorts of crazy stuff going on in the world. Revolutions that are killing people. Refugees having to go from one country to another, hundreds of thousands, millions of people living without a home, in desperate situation. Actually, the world's in worse shape right now. And then it was just one Vietnam, and now we got these Vietnams all over the place. So, So the real revolution is a revolution in consciousness. We're not interested in a political revolution. We're interested in a revolution in purifying people so they can love each other, really. Prabhupada says the real peace formula, right? Bhaktaram jagatapasam sarvaloka maheshram suridam sarvabhutanam getvamam shanti richati, 529 in the Gita. That one who understands Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme purpose of all sacrifices, sarvaloka maheshram, the supreme lord of all the worlds, suridam sarvabhutanam, he's your real friend. Suvidam sarvabhutanam, gyatvamam shantim richati, that can bring peace in the world. Prabhupada described this verse as the peace formula. Okay, so we'll go on. If we finish text one this week, we'll be lucky. So the conclusion is that only when we talk about devotional service and the Supreme Personality of Godhead can we refrain from useless, nonsensical talk. We should always endeavor to use our speaking power solely for the purpose of realizing Krishna consciousness. As far as the agitations of the flickering mind, they are divided into two divisions. The first is called avirodha priti, or unrestricted attachment, and the other is virodha yukta krodha, anger arising from frustration. Adherence to the philosophy of the Mayavadis, belief in the fruitive results of karma bodies, and belief in plans based on materialistic desires are called avirodha priti. That means unrestricted attachment. Jnanis, karmis, and materialistic plan makers generally attract the attention of conditioned souls, but when the materialists cannot fulfill their plans and when their devices are frustrated, devices or desires, they become angry. Frustration of material desires produces anger. And I think we talked about this before, that anger comes from frustration, contemplating sense objects, attachment, lust, and then anger comes. So this is the point, that you have attachment, and from attachment comes anger. So these are the two types of agitations of the flickering mind, either attachment to something or getting angry. That's how you can analyze when your mind starts going or flickering. And of course the anger comes from attachment. They're both connected with each other. Similarly, the demands of the body can be divided into three categories: the demands of the tongue, the belly, and the genitals. One may observe that these three senses are physically situated in a straight line, as far as the body is concerned, and that the bodily demands begin with the tongue. If one can restrain the demands of the tongue by limiting its activities to the eating of prasad, the urges of the belly and the genitals can automatically be controlled. And let's read the Prasadam prayer. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur says, Shavira Vijijal, Jitendriyak, Tehikal, Jivapule Vishay Sagare, Dharvade, Jivoyati, Lobamoy Sudurmati, Ake, Jita, Katina, Sang Sare, Krishna, Baradora, Doyame, Kuribara, Jivo Joy, Swapar Sad, Amadela, Obai, Sayanam Rit of Kal, Radhakrishna Gunaga, Prima Dhaka, Chaitanya, Nitari. O Lord, this material body is a lump of ignorance, and the senses are a network of paths leading to death. Somehow or other, we have fallen into the ocean of material sense enjoyment, and of all the senses, the tongue is the most voracious and uncontrollable. It is very difficult to conquer the tongue in this world, but you, dear Krishna, are very kind to us. You have sent this nice prasad to help us conquer the tongue. Therefore, let us take this prasad to our full satisfaction and glorify your lordship, Shri, Radha and Krishna, and in love, call for the help of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhu Nityananda. So, anyway, this is something we talked about before. The tongue, belly, genitals, as Prabhupada said, are in a straight line. So, the first point is if you don't eat too much, then you won't be so agitated. And usually, it's not a question of just simply sexual agitation. It's a question of anger, too. Because you know, the sexual agitation is oftentimes frustrated or one can't express it, and then one gets angry, like we talked about previously here. So, anyway, it's better to not eat too much, not eat too little. Of course, if you eat too little, you get sick. Mm. And if you eat too much, Prabhupada said, diabetes is the disease. Mm. So, one has to eat mityahara viharasha, the right amount. How do you know the right amount to eat? That's very interesting. There's different injunctions in the Vedic literatures. One is that you wait until you burp twice. Because some of us, they just, we hold it back so we can keep on eating. You've got to turn red in the face. So, but actually, the Ayurvedas talk about filling your stomach like half full with water and air, and then half with the food or something. And even the Ayurvedas talk about just a palm full of food. But the way I deal with this is you just eat slowly. Because it takes a while, physiologically, for your brain to get the message you're full. I mean, that's just a physiological fact. So if you eat slowly, your brain has enough time to get the message, hey, you're full. Don't need to eat anymore. But if you eat fast, if you just like swallow your food whole, you know, you throw your darukas into your mouth each one. I mean, first of all, you get indigestion. And second of all, you'll eat too much. But if you chew, like the Ayurveda say, you're supposed to chew like solid food something like 20 times. And you see, you know, when I'm taking prasadam, usually I'm the last one done. And it's not that I've eaten a tremendous amount. But I enjoy it more. And Prabhupada did the same thing. I mean, you see, there's a picture of Prabhupada taking prasadam. He would sometimes even face the wall and not engage in any talk. But I'm not saying we shouldn't talk. But sometimes prasadam times the time we relate to the devotees too, which is nice, to eat prasadam with devotees. And then Prabhupada would eat slowly, would take a bite out of a sweet ball and put the sweet ball down. Instead, what we do is we go, another one. <Like that. laughs> So, but Prabhupada would eat very slowly. He'd take a half an hour to eat just a small thali. Whereas, you know, we eat so fast. So that's really what I find. You know, I don't do the thing with the burping or the, you know, measuring how much space is in my stomach, you know, get a, you know, how many deciliters, you know. You go to the laboratory and you just measure, you know, so many deciliters of darukas, you know, today. So, or how many darukas should I eat? I just eat slowly, and when I'm full, I stop. If you do that, you'll find that you eat the right amount. Because the body knows. It does send you a message to the brain. And you won't feel like eating anymore. So, that's really my secret. So there are... and of course, if one eats too little, then when you finally sit down to eat, you're going to be super hungry. And you're going to eat too fast. That's what I've seen, too. So you really should understand, you know, how many times a day you need to eat. Also, another point about eating, you need to leave enough time between your meals. What I see is most devotees don't leave enough time between their meals. And they get sick because of that, the what's called am, or the poison collects in the system. Ayurveda says minimum 6 hours between a meal in which you've eaten grains and another meal. I mean, fruit is a different thing. Fruit you can eat, and then, you know, an hour later you can eat more fruit, like we do when we're traveling. But even still, devotees experience when they go around with me and they're eating, many of them have stomach aches. We had one devotee, when I started this in Australia, his name is Anandamoya, some of you may know him. Only one time he went around with me, and he was so traumatized because he thought it was wonderful. You know, he was going around, wow, opulent prasadam in each place, but it took him a week to recover because he was eating like every, you know, every hour. You know, because people bring out these plates, you know, opulent plates of prasadam. So, fruit, yes, but anything else, you wait 6 hours and you'll be healthier. At least 6 hours. Anyway, you wait until it's digested. You know when it's digested. It's not a hard thing to figure. And don't eat if you're not hungry. Don't eat just because it's a habit. Don't eat if you're in anxiety. Don't eat if you're in a rush. I mean, sometimes when we're traveling, and we we have to go to an air, you know, go in the airplane, the devotees say, you have to eat before you go. And I just like, you know, if I have to eat before I go, packing my bags, worrying about this, worrying about that, you know, then I'll get to the airport and just like regurgitate or just have stomach aches the whole, I mean, I've had flights like that where you just have stomach aches the whole flight. It's completely uncomfortable. So, yeah, if you're in anxiety, if you're arguing with someone, don't eat. Just stop. And wait until you're peaceful. Eating should be done in a peaceful state of mind. You're honoring prasadam. You're not eating prasadam. You're honoring prasadam. Prabhupada would relish the taste of prasadam. Understanding, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that is Krishna's lotus saliva within the prasadam. Okay. So there are six kinds of rasas, tastes. And if one is agitated by any one of them, that's like, you know, sweetness, bitterness, sourness, etc. It's like you have a tongue. And if you idolize the tongue, each part of the tongue tastes one of the rasas. Like when you're young, you get these things called lollipops, you know, lolly, and you lick it with the tip of your tongue. And that's why all the kids have like red tongues or something after a while, because that's the part that tastes the sweets. And if you burn your tongue, it's very frustrating because you can't taste anything. Life becomes unenjoyable at that point. So he becomes controlled by the urges of the tongue. Some persons are attracted to the eating of meat, fish, crabs. Prabhupada said about crabs, he says like eating pus. So lobster, he said, lobster and crabs, like eating pus. Eggs and other things produced by semina and blood and eaten in the form of dead bodies. I mean, that's mode of ignorance. Others are attracted by eating vegetables, creepers. That means like spinach or milk products, but all for the satisfaction of the tongue's demands. Such eating for sense gratification, including the use of extra quantities of spices like chili and tamarind, is to be given up by a Krishna-conscious person. I may also add, in Fiji, too much salt. You know, you can use a little salt. I mean, of course, I don't take much salt, but if I'm in Fiji and sweating, I'll take some salt, because otherwise you get dehydrated. But it's just, when I ask for a little salt in the plate, the devotees bring me this giant bowl of salt. And all I think is a pinch. You know, it's just like, huh? And when you stop taking salt, too much salt, you start tasting the food after a while. You discover the food is not just salty, there's other tastes other than salt. So the use of pan, haritaki, betel nuts, which I don't think any of you take, but in India it's quite common. Various spices used in pan making, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea is indulged in to fulfill illicit demands. It's interesting with tea, interesting story about Prabhupada, when the devotees in the movement started to get sick a little bit, they started to drink tea, and tea drinking became very common in the movement. And you know, it wasn't intoxicating tea, but Prabhupada really had this antipathy towards tea. Why? Because it represented to him the British. You understand? The British influence over India. Like if you're driving in India with a taxi, he has to stop, you know, tea time. You may be in a rush to get to the airport and late for your plane, but he has to stop at the dhaba for tea. You know? Or else he'll fall asleep, too. I mean, you better let him stop. So Prabhupada really had an antipathy against just tea. So when devotees were making these herbal teas, you know, and different things for their health, Prabhupada said, all right, if you want to take tea, I will give you the type of tea you have to take. And he called that a brahmastra, which meant hot peppers and ginger root, you know, like a mixture of hot peppers, ginger root, and some orange juice in it too at the same time. And if you drank it, you got well right away. I mean, steam was coming out of your ears. So in other words, because that was because of Prabhupada. I'm not criticizing anyone who takes herbal tea, but Prabhupada definitely had a feeling or what's called an antipathy against just tea itself. Even, you know, Prabhupada never took herbal tea or anything like that. If we can practice accepting only remnants of food offered to Krishna, it is possible to get free from Maya's victimization. Vegetables, grains, fruits, milk products, and water are proper foods to offer to the Lord as Lord Krishna himself prescribes. However, if one accepts prasad only because of its palatable taste and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Like Prabhupada said, many stalwarts have fallen down in the name of Mahaprasada. Sri Chaitanya, in other words, if you get a plate of Mahaprasada, you don't have to eat the whole plate. Just take a little bit. You know, people offer me Mahaprasada, I don't reject it, but I take a little bit and pop it in my mouth. It's not that put the whole thing in a mouth. Unless it was remnants from Prabhupada. I did that with Prabhupada. When I got Prabhupada's remnants, I ate the whole plate. And the grape stems, and the orange peels, and everything else. And I would have eaten the plate had it not been metal. If it was a paper plate, I would have eaten that too. So, but that's a specific time, circumstance you get. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to avoid very palatable dishes, even while eating prasad. Of course, that doesn't apply to new devotees, obviously. But Prabhupada is making reference to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction to Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami asked Lord Chaitanya through Swarup Damodar Goswami, what are the duties of one in the renounced order of life? And he said that one should not wear opulent clothes, is one of the two, one of the three, actually. One should not eat opulent food, and one should not think of ladies even in dreams. You know, these are the three instructions he gave. So this is very important. So basically, if one's not in the renounced order of life, there's a little leeway here. You know, you can engage your desire to eat palatable dishes. If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intentions of eating such nice food, we are involved in trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue, although that's dovetailing and eventually you get purified. Because Prabhupada at other times said, if you want to eat palatable dishes, offer it to the deities. So, if we accept the invitation of a rich man with the idea of receiving palatable food, we are also trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. In other words, if when I come here to New Zealand, I say to Krishna Chandra, you just arrange prasadam in places of people who cook nicely. Other people I'm not interested in, you know. We're only going to visit like people who use ghee, because I never say that, but and have mangoes in their house, and they import Daruka from Fiji. Otherwise, they let them go to some other sannyasi. So that would be what very bad. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Anchalila 6, 227 is stated, Juhara Lalase Ye Iti Uti Doi Shishno Dara Parayana Krishna Nahi Pai. That person who runs here and there seeking to gratify his palate, that's the tongue, and who's always attached to the desires of his stomach and genitals is unable to attain Krishna. As stated before, the tongue, belly, and genitals are all situated in a straight line. Wait a second. And they fall into the same category. Lord Chaitanya said, Bala na koibe, ara bala na haribe. Do not dress luxuriously and do not eat delicious foodstuffs. That's the instruction to Raghunath Das Goswami right there. Those who suffer from disease of the stomach must be unable to control the urges of the belly, at least according to this analysis. And it is a fact, especially as you get older, if you don't eat properly, you do start to have stomach aches right away. I mean, when you're young, you can get away with all sorts of things. But when you're older, my experience is you have to be really careful with the eating process. I mean, all sorts of things can happen, undesirable, physically. When we desire to eat more than necessary, we automatically create many inconveniences in life. However, if we observe fasting days like Ekadashi and Janmashtami, we can restrain the demands of the belly. As far as the urges of the genitals are concerned, there are two, proper and improper, or legal and illicit sex. When a man is properly mature, he can marry according to the rules and regulations of the Shastras and use his genitals for begetting nice children. That is legal and religious. Otherwise, he may adopt many artificial means to satisfy the demands of his genitals, and he may not use any restraint. When one indulges in illicit sex life, as defined by the Shastras, either by thinking, planning, talking about, or actually having sexual intercourse, or by satisfying the genitals by artificial means, he is caught in the clutches of Maya. These instructions apply not only to householders, but also to chagis, or those who are in the renounced order of life. In his book, Prema Vivarta, chapter 7, Sri Jagadananda Pandit says, Vairagi bhai gramya kata na shuni ve kan, gramya varta na koi ve yave mili ve an, swapane o na kara bhai stri sambhashan, grihestri chadiya bhai ashisha chavan, yale chaha pranaya rakite gorangera san, Chota Haridasera Kata Take Yeni Man Bala Na Koibe Hara Bala Na Paribe Vidayete Radha Krishna Sarvada Sevive.
My dear brothers, you are in the renounced order of life and you should not listen to talk about ordinary worldly things, nor should you talk about worldly things when you meet with others. Do not think of women even in dreams. You've accepted the renounced order of life with a vow that forbids you to associate with women. If you wish to associate with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you must always remember the incident of Chota Haridas, how he was rejected by the Lord. Do not eat luxurious dishes or dress in fine garments, but always remain humble and serve their Lordship Sri Sri Radhakrishna in their heart, in your hearts of hearts. I'm going to try to finish the purport today. The conclusion is that one who can control these six items, speech, mind, anger, tongue, belly, and genitals, is to be called a Swami or Goswami. Swami means master, and Goswami means master of the go, or senses. Also means cows. But anyway, when one accepts the renounced order of life, he automatically assumes the title Swami. This does not mean that he is the master of his family, community, or society. He must be the master of his senses. Unless one is master of his senses, he should not be called Goswami, but Godas. Godas Prabhu. Servant of the senses. Following in the footsteps of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, all Swamis and Goswamis should fully engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As opposed to this, the Godasas engage in the service of the senses or in the service of the material world. They have no other engagement. Prahlad Maharaj has further described the Godas as a non- Adantago, which refers to one whose senses are not controlled. That means there's no end to the senses. Adanta. An Adantago cannot become a servant of Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 5th chapter, text 30, Prahlad Maharaj has said, Madhirana Krishna Paratavasvatova Mitopadyeta Graha Vartanam Adantago Pir Vishatam Tamishram Punak Purnas Charvita Charvananam. For those who have decided to continue their existence in this material world for the satisfaction of their senses, there is no chance of becoming Krishna conscious, not by personal endeavor, by instruction from others, or by joint conferences. They are dragged by the unbridled senses into the darkest region of ignorance, and thus they madly engage in what is called chewing the chewed. And that instruction was given to his father. He told his father that. Oh my God. If your father's like Rani Kashyapu, don't tell him that. So any questions? Because I just wanted to finish this one verse today. Any questions about any of the points? Because a lot of these things are repetitive in the purport. Yes?
So Prabhupada said about observing fast days like Ekadasi and Janmashtami and how it helps control the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's benefits of fasting on Ekadasi?
Fasting from certain, grains and beans.
Because you put it in the same category with Janmashtami, where we observe a full fast.
Ekadasi can be observed different ways, of course. If one is engaged in preaching, one should definitely take prasadam. I mean, what I experience is if I'm active, engaged in preaching, if I try to fast completely, I can't focus my mind. I mean, I'm just not really effective. You know, I need, especially with my diet, I basically need to eat every day, or else I become immediately weak and without any strength. I can't focus. I can't even read. I mean, what's the use of a codicil like that? If I just look at the words on the page and everything just blurs in front of me. That's really what happens if I try to fast completely. But if other people, there's different constitutions, though. You know, according to Ayurveda, there's different constitutions. One is kapha,
by nature, then, yeah, no problem. They can fast the whole day. Probably be very good for them. Mm-hmm. But one is, you know, vata, which I have sort of a mixture, you know, the vata, you know, vata constitution and pitta. You know, as you can see, there's some pitta because I tend to go very fast. So that's pitta. And I get very angry, and that's pitta. So you can see, according to the constitution, how you should fast and what your service is. I mean, if my service was to be in bed all day, it would be nice to fast. But if my service is to read, chant, and preach to people, it doesn't really make sense because I can't do that service under those conditions. And, I mean, even with the Ram Nomi, I took some fruit around middle day in Ram Nomi when we celebrated the Super, because otherwise I wouldn't be fit to go to the evening program. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't focus. And without focusing, you can't preach. You know, we're dealing with a material body. We're dealing with a machine, a yantra. So we have to be practical when dealing with it. You know, I was talking to one devotee who would stay up all night on the Kadasi, and the next day she would complain about these headaches, migraine headaches. Migraine headaches are really heavy. It's like someone taking a hammer and hitting you on the head continually. Mm. And I said, you know, it's not really a good idea for you to stay up all night because you could see the result of it. But she said, no, it's spiritual. So, you know, we do have bodies that do function in certain ways. You know, you may be in the Krishna conscious movement, but if you jump off the building, you'll still break a few legs, you know. It's not that, like, Prahlad Maharaj was saved, you know, by throwing off the cliff. So if you go off a cliff, you know, Krishna's going to catch you. The material body works a certain way, so be aware of it. The point is to maximize your service for Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur even fed people rice on the Kadasi if they were going to preach. Not all the time, but sometimes people will complain. Because in Bengal, without rice, it's fasting. It's not food. I mean, the only food in Bengal. Everything else is just like you add to the rice. You know, three times a day, you eat rice. So he gave them rice on the Kadasi so they can preach. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur even arranged, you know, for things like feeding English people meat so they would feel comfortable when they came to Mayapur to meet with him. And it's pretty radical. Prabhupada wanted a smoking room in the Bombay Hotel so the people would feel comfortable. I mean, you don't have to do it now because smoking has become actually not so accepted as it was in the old days. I mean, smoking was much more accepted in India. But now people are starting to realize it kills you. So, you know, intelligent people, they've really given up smoking at this point. But not in those days. So Prabhupada, you know, so we don't want to be so much Niyamagraha attached to the rules and regulations that we actually forget the purpose of Krishna consciousness. So in Ekadasi, I usually like to chant 64 rounds, so I have nothing else to do on that day. And, you know, if I fasted completely, I wouldn't be able to chant 64 rounds. No way. It just wouldn't work. So you have to judge something by the result. You know, what Palena Padachiyate. That's what we were talking about. Palena means the fruit. Padachiyate. You judge something by the fruit, what is happening. Like Prabhupada's preaching, his godbrothers criticized him for associating with us, you know, Malechas. But the fruit was that so many people became Krishna conscious. So you judge an activity, even though it's prohibited for a sannyasi to associate with Malechas, to live in a place where meat eating is going on. He was living in a place where there was cat food in the refrigerator and everything like that. Prohibited. It's completely prohibited. You're going to cross an ocean. But what was the result? So, Palena Padachiyate, you judge from the result. So, I think one more question. Nandabharat, you had a question.
Can sports be dovetailed into Krishna?
Yes.
57 people watch.
Well, are they devotees in 57 people? I guess, you know, if you go, Krishna, please let them win. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And you go to the deities, you make a special offering. If you give a big enough donation in the temple. Like it's a funny thing, like Prabhupada said, how demigod worship can be dovetailed. One devotee wanted to worship Ganesh. And so Prabhupada said, if you give minimum $100,000 a month, you can worship Ganesh. And he did it. And he did it. I mean, he was engaged in collecting money for Vrindavan, for Prabhupada. And so, you know, yeah, there's ways. I mean, There's some way, I mean, you can figure out a way, but it would take a lot of mental strength to figure out how to dovetail watching the Fiji 7 games. Please, Krishna. Like Prabhupada, Prabhupada, interesting story, when Prabhupada was young, he would fly kites with his sister, Bhavatarini, and Prabhupada would be praying to Krishna, let it fly, let it fly. So he's dovetailing it. I mean, for a child, first of all, children should have these games. And children do need some games. And we also need games, too. I mean, it's not a problem for us to engage in some sporting activities for our physical health.
That's correct.
You know, that's fine. But my caution is don't engage in something that's going to give you brain damage. I mean, there was this one boxer, his name was Cassius Clay, he became Muhammad Ali, I don't remember if you all remember. He always would say, I'm the greatest. So the devotees met him in the airport one time, and he just couldn't talk anymore, because, you know, he had hit in the head so many times, or hit wherever, you know, so many times. So engage in something that's not going to damage the body. And yes, there's a great benefit to exercising. If you don't exercise every day, just like we go bicycle riding, that's exercise. And it's very nice because, you know, gets the blood flowing, the lymph system gets going. In the body, you have this lymph system, the doctor will tell you about that. It doesn't have a pump. So you have to move to get the lymph moving. The lymph takes away, like, the poisons in the system. So that's why when people sit all day long, this thing called sitting disease, we're going to talk about this at the farm, isn't it? Not the farm, here in Australia. Because we're giving a seminar called Don't Stop Killing the Devotees, which is the same one I've given in Europe. So, you know, if you sit all day, then you may get some blood clots. Just like this morning I talked to the son of one of my disciples, and she has blood clots in her lungs and body, and she's getting ready to die. I mean, she's young, she's only 85. That is young. That is young. If you think that's old, you're in trouble. My mother is 87, and she drives a car, swims 50 laps in a swimming pool every day, takes care of people who are not able to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. Young, but anyway, so because she was just sitting there, she's bedridden. But you have to force yourself to move. That's the first thing you do in the hospital now after an operation. They force you to get out of bed. You're saying, no, let me stay in bed. It's painful. Get the hell out of there. Right? They don't use those words. Yeah, they don't want. I mean, obviously, start moving. And then, you know, physical rehab starts you moving. And so, you know, exercise is extremely important, or else, you know, you're going to get blood clots, you're going to get sick. You know, anyway. So we should exercise. And some nice sports to give you some exercise is very good. I mean, I don't suggest pool, doesn't give you much exercise. You know, 8-ball doesn't give you much exercise, but, you know, something nice. You get going, play volleyball. We used to play volleyball in Fiji.
Yeah.
Right before the temple opening in Suva, we had a volleyball game every day. You remember being seen?
Yeah.
It was fun. And it was team building, too. That's another benefit. Mm-hmm. All the devotees were on different teams. We said, we're going to get you. Because if you don't do that, they'll fight each other in another way. I mean, if you can get rid of the fighting propensity for volleyball, that's how it can be tough. Yeah, we had all the teams. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. I mean, I enjoyed it very much.
You know, they play soccer after Sunday program,
in the
afternoons.
Yeah, I mean, it's team building, so there's benefits to be gained from sports, certain types of sports. So the thing should be judged by the results, that's the point. Palena padachiyate, it's not that something is necessarily inherently bad or good, it's what is the result of it. It's called consequentialism. You judge something by the result. That's the whole discussion on the internet. You've read it. That's right. I mean, it's a heavy discussion. But it's a fact. I mean, in the Vedas, you see consequentialism all the time. Like Arjuna had to kill his guru. That's against the regulated principles, I hope. You kill your guru. But, you know, Krishna, because there was good result from it. You understand? But Krishna advised Arjuna to do something that's prohibited. Kill your guru. Kill your grandfather. You know, who's going to do that? But the result, anyway, so in that case, you know, you see something that was apparently adharmic becomes dharmic because a plena paraciete or consequentialism in English. But I'm not going to go on the internet and make that argument because then people do it ad hominem attacks. They attack you personally. That's why I never get in arguments on the internet because it always ends up in Kali Yuga as a personal attack. And it never ends. Just like Arjuna asked the other day, you know, isn't it, what about debates in ISKCON? Debates. I said, it just ends up personal attacks usually.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
In my profession, I have to talk throughout the day.
That's nice.
As a teacher. So, it's not Krishna conscious talk.
That's right.
So, where do we stand in that case?
Well, because you're giving the results to Krishna. You're doing your dharma. You have a dharma like someone has to support his family. That's part of your dharma. And you're engaging your house in preaching. You know, you're preaching to so many people. You have to maintain yourself. I mean, there's a lot of things we do that aren't direct Krishna conscious. Like in the morning, you know, I have to bathe and take a shower. I mean, it's not one of the Navabhakti principles. You know, non-processed devotional service, bathe, clean your clothes, you know. But it's connected. So if something assists with the Navabhakti process, then that is to be accepted. And it's dharma. As long as you're not, you know, as long as you're not teaching people how to kill cows or cook meat or anything like that, running home economics. You know what home economics is? They have courses that teach you how to cook in the
food technology, they call it.
Oh, food. Now they call it food technology. As long as you're not saying, you know, throw this lamb's head into the fire, you know, into the pot and stir, double, double, boil, trouble, you know. the bubble. As long as you're not doing that, I mean, it's all right. I think it's all right. So we have to end because we got a big day. Okay, tomorrow we go on to verse 2. That's exciting. This, you see, there's so many things to be understood from these verses here. It's actually quite.
Why is there no new version of this? I mean, new edition.
Right to the BBT.
You've got a new one. I haven't.
Always a new one.
It's on the pages.
Purple color with a picture of
Samadhi.
All right, so there is a new one.
Okay. Yeah, that's a lovely one.
But there's a newer one, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the first edition.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the... the pages are yellow and everything like that, but... Okay, all glorious to divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. See everybody. See everybody in TV land. Okay.